Hello, everyone. I'm Al Deldegan, creator and producer of the Leaders, Innovators, and Big Ideas podcast, supported by Rainforest Alberta. This podcast showcases the people who are working to improve Alberta's innovation ecosystem. Mike Proceed digs into innovation with startup founder Brent Colvin. Take it away, Mike.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Al, and thank you very much for our listeners for tuning in today. I'm very excited to have Brent Colvin here today from Good Lawyer on the show to discuss innovation within his organization. But before we jump into that, Brent, how are you doing today?
Doing well, man. Yeah, things are kicking over here at Good Lawyer, and excited to have a little chat about it today.
Awesome. Well, glad to have you on the show. First off, for our listeners, we have listeners from right across Alberta, fairly Calgary focused. So you might have been living under a rock to not hear some of the good stuff that Good Lawyer is doing already. But why don't you give us a little bit of an overview? Tell us a bit about Good Lawyer before we jump in here.
For sure. So I started my career in law at one of the big national law firms and, you know, spent almost 5 years there. And in truth, it was overall a good experience for me, but I did feel incredibly stifled and frustrated by the lack of innovation or, you know, frankly, willingness to pursue true innovation. And I think, you know, a lot of that comes back to the core incentive model with respect to a partnership and then what folks are very familiar with when it comes to billable hours. And, you know, the longer you take on something, the more you're going to be billing. So for me, that was a broken sort of system. A lot of the time I felt that you could be more deliberate and thoughtful with the pricing of legal services and really tying that back to value. And that is really where Good Lawyer started, with a platform that connected, you know, early stage startups, small business owners with lawyers right across Canada to get a la carte fixed fee services to help their business grow. And where Good Lawyer has gone over, you know, especially the last 18 months, is to continue moving up market with the most successful companies that, you know, we've been working with for years. And that has unlocked something beyond just the fixed fee marketplace into what we call fractional general counsel, or now fractional in-house counsel, that's actually serving some of the largest enterprises in the province and across the country. So this idea of being able to embed junior, but more often senior legal talent into an executive team or into, you know, a larger legal team within a larger enterprise that, you know, bridges the gap between a full-time in-house hire and outsourcing, you know, operational, grow the business legal work to external firms that frankly are significantly more expensive for the same type of talent. But I think more importantly, less embedded and, you know, further away from the metal, so to speak, when it comes to how the business is actually operating, what the risk tolerance is, and, you know, for the lawyers, from the lawyer's perspective, what needs to happen to move the business forward. So today, I'm proud to say that Good Lawyer is Canada's leader in fractional legal talent.
Amazing. And what a great niche to find yourself in as well. Like, my limited experience, you know, everyone's aware that the large organizations have in-house teams, like sometimes quite large in-house teams. If you're small and starting up, you bootstrap it. You find a friend who's a lawyer. You try to use your methods to get moving that way. And it really is kind of an ambiguous middle zone. Like, what do you do as you're experiencing that growth? And it sounds like Good Lawyer offers a variety of services to help people in that stage. So from my perspective, kind of the outside looking in, I would consider Good Lawyer quite disruptive from the traditional model. How did you see this opportunity for yourself? And how did you say, like, yes, this is something that I'm going to go for?
I think the pain points on the client side were readily apparent even before I got into the law firm. You know, I run small businesses growing up. And like you said, you know, trying to find a friend who knew somebody that, you know, could give me some free advice from a legal perspective long before law school. And then as a practicing lawyer, you know, getting pushback on bills and just like even myself thinking every minute of my time, we sold them in 6 minute intervals back in the firm, but you know, every minute of my time was not worth the same, at least not from my perspective. There was sometimes I was working on something that was huge, hugely leveraged and, you know, strategically important for a business. And other times, you know, I'd be sitting there at the photocopier waiting for the pages to flip out. And those were, you know, from a billing perspective, valued the exact same, which made no sense to me. So the client pain points and the cost in particular, and then, you know, that becomes more exacerbated depending, you know, the smaller the business, the more pain they typically feel. But it is felt even in the largest enterprises that are, you know, building these huge, effectively internal law firms to focus on those operational legal needs that, you know, help the business run and grow, and trying to rely less and less on external counsel for those types of legal needs. There are areas where, you know, the big firms are, you know, the go-to option. If you've got a bet the business litigation or you're going public, you know, that is what those firms are really designed to do and where they flourish. But when it comes to the sales contracts, the employment portfolio, you know, the regulatory compliance, those types of things just don't fit as nicely to be sending out external. So that's the gap that, as you've identified, we're trying to fill. But the piece that I think really gave me the confidence to step away from the firm, I've got a little anecdote I'll share in a minute about a sort of acute moment when I knew I was going to leave. But it was the fact that the lawyers, the majority of them, I did not see being, you know, happy with their careers. And, you know, if all the lawyers in the firm were loving life and, you know, things were groovy for the lawyers, the professionals, then at least I could understand why we, you know, stick with the status quo, even if it's somewhat painful for clients of all shapes and sizes. But the fact that there was so much sort of discontentment within the firm from the lawyer side of things, that's really the piece of the puzzle that I thought, you know, would allow us to build something that provided, you know, greater flexibility for parents who, you know, want to actually raise their kids, which is not really an option if you're going the partner track. You know, it was always a joke that, you know, you better be hiring a live-in nanny if, you know, the two parents were going to be working in the big firms. And so for me, it was, you know, identifying this client pain and also identifying this lawyer pain that, you know, really sprouted the idea and gave me the conviction that we could build something better that worked for everybody, lawyers and clients alike.
I love that it's inspired by both the personal and the professional. It's not only, yes, there's a problem here, let's lean in and fix it, but it's also from a personal standpoint, yes, there's a purpose here and like something that people can get behind and increase in that happiness, which we talk a lot about on the podcast and in different avenues. I think we're really in a great area post-pandemic where people are starting to consider like, what's important to me? What kind of quality do I want for my life? And how do I achieve that? So it sounds right on par. I'm curious with your perspective overall, is the lawyer profession typically associated with innovation? Would you describe it as quite an innovative profession, or are they more slow adopters, fast second type thing?
I would say it's probably one of the most conservative professions in existence. Perhaps the most.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I think, like, I fell in love with the law when I was in law school. Like, I actually think the law is possibly the coolest invention that humanity has come up with because it facilitates all of the interactions and all of the additional innovation.
Yeah.
So it is ironic that the professionals, the bar that is in charge of, you know, really kind of, well, practicing law is so behind the times. And, you know, in Canada and in the US, it has changed in other jurisdictions like the UK and Australia. But in Canada and the US, lawyers are self-regulated. So, you know, the legal profession regulates itself. And the idea is that the profession can be a check and balance on government. And that's like the core reason why lawyers are self-governing in Canada and the US. It's also done on a state-by-state basis, which complicates matters a little bit in terms of reform. But fundamentally, I think the law is predicated on precedent. Certainly the common law is like quite literally predicated on precedent. And, you know, lawyers' personality types, just, you know, very much generalizing, are you know, typically more risk adverse folks. I think I am quite an odd duck in the world of law. Not a lot of sort of hardcore entrepreneurs make it through 7 years of school and then practice in a big firm setting for nearly five, which I think puts me in a slightly unusual bucket in terms of the personas in the world of law. So you have risk adverse people in an industry predicated on, you know, what has happened in the past precedent. And I think those sort of forces coalesce into, coupled with the regulatory monopoly that we have that I was kind of alluding to, create a situation where there's just not that much innovation or incentive to innovate. Although with Gen AI and everything happening now,
it's forced.
It's moving faster than ever before. But there has been that hesitation, reservation to change things. And, you know, not all lawyers, certainly, but the ones in the big shops that I think have the most influence when it comes to lobbying and things like that, things are working pretty good for them. You know, you got a 4% CAGR year over year in a market that, you know, by all accounts is fairly fragmented. Even the biggest firms make up a tiny percentage of the market. Like in Canada, the biggest firms make up less than 1% of total legal services. So a hugely fragmented market, but with sort of common risk adverse approach to building businesses and regulating the practice of law. So to tie that long-winded answer in a bow, I would say no, it is not an innovative industry. And I think that is what, you know, principally has created this fantastic opportunity for companies like Good Lawyer to step in, take some more risk than lawyers are accustomed to, and build something that, you know, hopefully at the end of the day provides a new and sort of ideal track for lawyers that have a little bit of that entrepreneurial itch, maybe not quite as much as I did, but a little bit of that, and, you know, a path for this fulfilling career that isn't totally baked in prestige or this perceived prestige and grinding, you know, into the wee hours day after day, and is really fundamentally built around creating value, you know, being a good professional, a good lawyer, but creating value and then being compensated for that value by, you know, for us, the client being some of the coolest companies in Canada, and soon we'll be taking, you know, this approach to the US.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, a lot of really good nuggets in there about, you know, the model as a whole. I'm curious, you mentioned there a few different times you yourself had started in big law. For any corporate innovators that might be listening right now, and they might be in large corporate, whatever that looks like to them, if they see a disruptive opportunity within their own business, can they pursue it internally within those realms, or do they want to go start a business? Any nuggets there for our listeners?
Yeah, for sure. So I think, you know, there's two pieces of that. As I see it, you have the company itself, and then you have the individuals within the company. So, you know, as we're seeing kind of with Google right now, there can be this innovator's dilemma for incumbents that, you know, have a cash cow that's just bringing in the dough. But, you know, this future sort of state that they can see coming, that's going to disrupt the status quo. And this, you know, hard decision to make, when do you make
rock their own boat?
Exactly. So I think at the company level, you know, really being honest as, like, you know, the leadership team or whatever, where is the future going and how do we get ahead of it? Because the worst thing you can do, and, you know, go talk to the folks at Yahoo from back in the day, the worst thing you can do is stay static and, you know, ultimately lose your defensibility, because despite your, you know, significantly greater resources presently, but you losing that sort of, advantage that you have by being too slow to pull the trigger on, you know, what's coming in the future. At the individual level, I would say that I think the world today, even in the largest enterprises, is fairly progressive or forward thinking when it comes to intrapreneurship. And, you know, I definitely think my experience in the firm was very limited, and certainly I felt very stifled in terms of trying to put forward any of my innovative ideas. The anecdote I was going to share was that was the final straw was the senior guy coming to my office, slamming the door and saying, "Brett, keep coming up with your ideas. Just keep it to yourself."
Oh, wow.
And that for me was like the kind of watershed moment where I was like, okay, I can't even be sharing my ideas anymore. They're bubbling up all the time. So I think I need to make that move. Fortunately, I was able to raise a little bit of capital, quit my job, and you know, the rest is kind of history. But yeah, that would be my sort of first suggestion would be, are there opportunities for entrepreneurship if you're in a company that you love working at? Can you do things internally that can move the needle and, you know, provide you with fulfillment, I suppose? And then if not, then yeah, maybe it is time to seek out a new role in an organization that is more forward thinking and open to, you know, individual creativity. Or, you know, if you do have a bit of that entrepreneurial bug and you're a bit more of a risk taker, then, you know, I love building a business. It's the thing that I think I probably derive most enjoyment. I don't have any hobbies. Like my whole life is a giant Googler video game.
There you go.
And so for the folks that have, you know, that true entrepreneurial spirit, then, you know, I think they'll probably know that. And there's no time like the present to take that leap and, you know, pursue what's going to, for you, provide a good life and a meaningful one.
And we talk a lot about entrepreneurship too on this podcast, and we've seen a massive kind of not resurgence, but just surge of it, given that I think organizations are more open to this. You're seeing more people with side gigs, side hustles, whatever it might be. And the really effective organizations tie them together. They say, oh, you're great at photography. How can we incorporate that into your day-to-day, right? To let people live that. And like you say, if that's not the case, if you don't have that flexibility internally, then maybe it is time to look externally. So as you tell your little story there, the anecdote about the big boss coming in, closing the door and having a conversation with you, now you yourself find yourself in the situation where you are the big boss going in and chatting with people. How do you plan on keeping good lawyer innovative as you grow out of the startup phase? How do you keep that spark of innovation alive?
I mean, you might have a slightly different impression of where, you know, good lawyer is in its journey. I certainly don't feel like the big boss. I more like a player coach. But, you know, I'm surrounded by brilliant, committed people, many of whom I've known for, you know, the better half of my life. And, you know, I think it's not something that I've honestly ever had to even consider. How do we stay innovative? Like, we are at the core fundamentally testing and iterating things all of the time. Fractional GC or fractional in-house didn't exist really at all 18 months ago. You know, we just launched our second brand spanking new platform oriented to those fractional lawyers. And that went live, you know, like 3 weeks ago. And so for us, innovation is a part of every single day. It's core to what we're doing. And I think, you know, maybe if you fast forward 10, 15 years, maybe we will experience our own innovator's dilemma. And, you know, the question of how do we stay innovative is, you know, pertinent or top of mind. But at this stage, you know, almost 5 years in now, we are constantly innovating, and you know how to stay innovative is again not a concept that I need to worry about at this stage in the game.
Second nature at this point still, which is great to hear, and I think evident and seen in some of the services being offered. So lastly, we always wrap up with a similar question here, Brett. Any words of advice for corporate innovators right now listening that are ready to disrupt an industry?
Talk to your clients. Test things in sort of, you know, the MVP gets thrown around a lot of the time, but truly, what is the minimal viable way to test an idea? And, you know, what are they? There's a phrase for it. I can't remember exactly what it's called. Like, I want to say the Houdini. I don't think that's right. But, you know, even if you're trying to test whether a new product makes sense or a new business line makes sense, you can kind of gaslight, you know, with a web page that is actually, you know, there's a person on the other end just to validate messaging or whether there's an appetite for this new product, this new market. well before you start developing anything from a technology or more sort of integrated process perspective.
Yes.
And that is one of the really cool things I think about this new product that we're launching for Fractional Counsel, which are fractional GC and fractional in-house lawyers, is the approach we're taking is more hypothesis testing and sort of experimentation driven than ever before. And we were fortunate to bring someone to the team recently that, you know, has more experience running a product function like that, who is able to support one of my co-founders, Tom, our chief product, and Parker, our CTO, in properly designing experiments, testing them, throwing them in the bin quickly if they're not biting, and just taking this experimental approach in a way that, you know, we thought we were sort of before, but in retrospect, that's a new muscle that I'd say we've developed in the last 6 months. And so far, it's already paying dividends. And I, as the CEO, am better understanding than ever what experimentation actually means and how important it is to, you know, unlocking that value that you think might be there, but you don't really know yet.
Absolutely. And we talk a lot. It reminds me of a story in the Calgary Innovation Pure Forum, where one group was looking at launching quite a big project for a requirement where people could request this certain service, and then it kind of enters a workflow. So they heard they were getting demand, kind of, but rather than going and building the entire product, they just built the button on their website that says, like, request this service, and they tracked the amount of clicks that they received. And despite customers saying they were interested in it, when they put the button out there, they didn't receive many clicks. So they're like, okay, let's not spend the time and investment. And it's those sorts of experiments and lab results that can be quite telling.
Totally. Couldn't agree more.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Brett, again, for this time. Thanks for carving some time out of your day. I found the conversation really insightful, and I'm looking forward to watching Good Lawyer grow here over the next few years.
Fantastic, man. Again, I appreciate your time and having me on today. And for, you know, any of the corporate innovators listening, I can assure you there's a more innovative way to right source your legal operations. And check us out at goodlawyer.ca.
If you haven't already, visit rainforestab.ca and sign the Rainforest Social Contract. Become part of the inclusive, silo-busting, sector-agnostic, all-industry, open-sourced, ego-shrinking, ecosystem-building, entrepreneur-focused, wide-open, social barrier-smashing community known as Rainforest Alberta. This episode was brought to you by New Idea Machine. NIM helps new software developers, UI UX designers, and product managers gain mentored hands-on industry experience. And at the same time, we provide companies with risk-free tech talent. Definitely a win-win-win situation. Visit newideamachine.com for more information. Music for the show was created by Tony Deldegan. Please be sure to share this episode with everyone you know. Also, don't forget to come by and say hi at the next Rainforest event. Let us know what you think of this podcast. If you're interested in being either a host, sponsor, or a guest of the show, send me an email at rainforestpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.